Okay, I call this meeting of the House Preventive Health Division to order. The first item on the business, the first item of business is the roll call. So the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Vice Chair Bierman.
Present.
Bierman present. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Grunhagen present. Representative Acomb.
Present.
Acomb present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Baje present. Representative Ackland.
Present.
Representative Ackland present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Carlson present. Representative Franzen.
Franzen present.
Franzen present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Morrison present. Representative Pryor.
Pryor present.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, a quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from our February 2nd, 2022 hearing of the Preventive Health Policy Division. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 2nd?
Motion to approve, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bierman. Vice Chair Bierman has moved approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. I'm trying to get things in order here. Mr. Brown, are we hearing testimony before turning to the bill?
Yes, we're starting with some testimony from the Department of Health and School-Based Health.
Okay, that's right. I overlooked that. So I was all ready to go to a bill. So we have the first item is we are going to have some testimony from the Department of Health on school-based health clinics. I believe Karen Fogg from the Child and Family Health Division is here to testify. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Fogg. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Karen Fogg with the Minnesota Department of Health. Okay, great. My slides are just appearing now, so thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm Karen Fogg. I'm the Maternal and Child Health Section Manager with the Minnesota Department of Health, and I will talk to you today about school-based health centers. Next slide, please. School-based health centers are an evidence-based model for delivering health care to children and adolescents where they spend most of their time in school. This means that students K through 12 can get a flu shot, have an annual physical, have their teeth examined or their eyes checked, or speak with a mental health counselor, all in a safe and nurturing place. Services are provided to students irrespective of their ability to pay, making this an efficient and cost-effective way to address health inequities. These health centers are truly part of the community. Next slide, please. School-based health centers offer greater alignment and integration between education and health professionals to improve children's cognitive, physical, and oral health alongside of their social, emotional, and educational development. These clinics are multidisciplinary services in a combined location, and they are embedded in the school environment. This means they're woven into the school culture, they're woven into relationships with parents, teachers, administrators, and allied service professionals also in school, such as school counselors, social workers, and the school nurses. It's also an equity tool. This model bridges a critical gap by addressing common barriers to routine healthcare for children. Issues like transportation, cost, lost time in school, and lost time for work for parents. Next slide, please. This model is also evidence-based. The strategy results in increased access to care, improved health outcomes, improved academic attendance and achievement among students. Additionally, evidence suggests that school-based health centers result in reduced emergency room visits, reduced hospital utilization, reduced healthcare costs, and lower dropout rates. Next slide, please. In Minnesota, we're pioneers in this work. The first school-based health centers opened in the 1970s. Currently, the school-based health centers are primarily located in the metro area with a clinic in Rochester. In 2015, the School-Based Health Alliance was organized in Minnesota, and in 2017, this group became a recognized state affiliate of the National Alliance. Next slide, please. So up until recently, we provided no direct financial support to school-based health centers. However, beginning in 2015, MDH provided staff time to support technical assistance for the School-Based Health Alliance. And this year, we've had the opportunity to provide grants related to COVID response and recovery. Next slide, please. MDH received one-time supplemental funding from the CDC to support health workforce related to COVID response and recovery. As part of this, part of these funds, 25% of the overall total was required to go towards school health. The major emphasis of this work is on workforce. For example, hiring new staff, increasing part-time workers to full-time workers. Through this supplemental funding, we were able to offer around $2.5 million in grants to the school-based health centers and to the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance. This supports 23 centers throughout the state. The focus of these funds were really on staffing to expand physical and mental health services in school-based health centers. We're hoping that these funds help children and adolescents catch up with healthcare that they may have missed because of COVID and address new needs like mental and behavioral health. In addition to the work with the school-based health centers, we're able to offer $6 million in grants to the Minnesota Service Cooperative to support regional work and schools throughout the state related to health issues. Next slide, please. School health is part of the governor's supplemental budget proposal related to school-based health centers. The governor is recommending $1 million in grants to support new and existing school-based health centers to expand the reach of this integrated model and expand the impact of this evidence-based work. The proposal also includes oral health grants to integrate preventive oral health services in school settings. Dental problems are a primary reason for missed school, and access to dental care can be a major barrier in some communities. These preventive health services or preventive dental services are quick, painless, simple, and can be done in a school setting by qualified health professionals. In addition, we have a small grants program to support the alignment of public health and education sectors in other communities throughout the state. This whole school, whole child, whole community model is an evidence-based national framework around student health. It emphasizes the role of community in supporting school and the connection between health and academic achievement. The idea of this grant program would be focused on communities who are interested in one or more of the model's components. For example, a component like physical activity, nutrition, employee wellness, or family engagement. This extends the connection between schools and local public health and allows communities to partner where they're interested in working on student and community health. Next slide, please. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'm happy to answer additional questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fogg, for your testimony. I did think it would be helpful to hear from the department prior to hearing the bill, since it's on the same subject. We do have a few minutes if any members do have any questions specific to Ms. Fogg. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Fogg. I got an email here from a parent constituent about a lot of concern about this bill. And one of the concerns, and I'll probably share more in the future about that, but to what degree can they give out medical or do medical procedures on the child without parental notification or permission?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. The bill's not, just to be clear, the bill's not before us yet, but that is a general question that I think Ms. Fogg could answer. And also, just so I know, Ms. Fogg, will you stick around for the bill discussion as well, in case there is a question that comes up during the bill that you could answer at that point?
Yes, Chair, I'm able to do that.
Okay, wonderful. So then if you could just answer Representative Grunhagen's question now, too, that would be great.
All right, thanks, Chair, and thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Like any health clinic, school-based health centers must follow the law in Minnesota. My understanding with regards to parental consent, that each clinic does seek parental consent. My understanding is that they may do so in sort of a blanket way where they seek parental consent perhaps at the beginning of the school year. And then would have that in a file, or they may need to seek parental consent for each service. Other testifiers later today who operate these clinics may provide more information and answers to your questions.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for that response. I think that is a major concern of a number of parents. But here's, you know, when I was on the school board, I'll just share this. I got a call from a parent, her 16-year-old, she had received a bill in the mail on her, from Hutchinson Medical Center on her daughter. And she opened it up, and here her daughter had been referred over to the Hutch Medical Center by the high school without her knowledge. So she called up Hutch Medical Center and said, was my daughter over there for medical treatment? And she was told, that bill is in your daughter's name. What business do you have opening it? Well, that's the parent, okay? So we had a major discussion about this at the school board meeting. So the concern is, I think that law is still on the books. The concern is that healthcare initiatives could be done to the child without the parent's notification, and yet the parent is still responsible financially. So I just want to give you that for food for thought. Thank you again for your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I don't see any other member questions, so I think I will move to the bill, which is on the same subject, so there'll be an opportunity for questions there as well. Representative Sandell, welcome to the committee. So I will move that House File 3114 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Sandell, would you please present your bill? You are muted.
Thanks very much, Chair Freiberg and committee members, for the invitation to talk to your committee this morning as an advocate for school-based health centers. It doesn't matter if we speak from academic research or longitudinal studies, clinical experience, anecdotes, or family history. Healthy kids are better students. They attend school more often, they enjoy the experience and graduate more frequently, they participate in more school and community activities, and they're more likely to be employed, in school, or otherwise self-sufficient after high school. They have a brighter future. The problem is that the health and well-being of all young children and young families are not assured. Even as healthcare providers may be available, in many ways, all children are at risk. The question is, how can we provide the support and accessible service that all kids and their families need? The answer can be the professional, immediate, and accessible care without regard to one's ability to pay or immigrant status that school-based health centers can provide. House File 3114 is about the health and well-being of our children and their young families. There are very few successful and engaged students who are not healthy. Though counties, state agencies, community-based organizations, and many families provide the support and help the kids need, many kids face significant health-related issues, whether physical or mental health, poor nutrition or personal care, problems at home, unstable housing, the impact of poverty, self-imposed pressure, or social ostracism, any one of which can disrupt a young life. Coincidentally, the Brookings Institute published an extensive report this morning saying exactly the same thing. Most children feel helpless in those situations. They're not used to finding a doctor, making appointments, or confiding in a professional health caregiver. School-based health centers are not a new idea. The Minnesota School-Based Health Center Alliance was initiated as a volunteer organization by leaders of the Minnesota SBCs and the Minnesota Department of Health, with ties to the national group as early as 2017. Healthcare providers, school districts, and families have supported school-based health care in Minnesota for 50 years. 27 health centers now operate in schools around the state, but without the kind of help we're asking for today, growth has been very difficult. House File 3114 is the octane we need to strengthen the centers already in place and provide the opportunity for other districts to join the alliance in the service and their schools and lined up. The bill requests an appropriation of $1,400,000. We want that money to leverage support from the Department of Health to put this practice and this promise in place. I've invited three experts on healthcare today. Shauna Hedlund is the executive director of the Minnesota School-Based Health Center Alliance. Linda Dick Olson and Dr. Valeria Cristiani are here to describe all that's being done already and all we hope to accomplish. Ms. Hedlund will begin. Shauna?
Thank you, Representative Sandell. And if testifiers could just keep to about 3 minutes, just to make sure we have enough time to discuss it. So welcome to the committee, Ms. Hedlund. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. If you're speaking, you might be muted.
Okay, let's try that again. thank you, Chair Freiberg and members of the committee for having me here today. My name is Shauna Hedlund, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance. And thank you, Representative Sandell, for that introduction. I just want to make sure that you are seeing the slides for the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance. Okay, great. And you'll see that the Department of Health and myself are sharing some of the same visuals today, so you get to see them again. And it looks like I'm having some trouble with the slides. I'm spinning. Sorry about that. Let's try this again.
Yes, we were seeing them.
You were. I couldn't advance them for some reason.
Oh, okay.
I know, Simon, you have them too. Is there a chance you could actually?
I can do it.
Okay, thank you.
Well, do you see it?
Yeah, thank you so much. I apologize for taking that time to do that. So here we go. School-based health centers are an effective and expandable approach to curb health and education disparities, increase mental health support for students, and assist collaborations between school districts and healthcare providers to ensure.
One second, Simon. I think we're in presenter view. So yeah, if you.
I was wondering about that. Let me quick. Okay, let me reshare it. One second.
Sorry, this won't count against your time, Ms. Hedlund.
Okay. Thank you so much.
How about that? Does that work?
Yes, that's better.
Great.
I can see them too, bonus. Thank you. So I believe I was repeating the Department of Health a bit there, so I will move on quickly. In House File 3114, we provide funding to current and new school-based healthcare initiatives, support quality care in school-based clinics, and formalize a long-term relationship we've built over 8 years on a volunteer basis between Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance and the Minnesota Department of Health. I say volunteer because the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance is comprised of a board that represents each of the major operators of school-based health centers in Minnesota. And we'll take a look at that, who that is soon. We can move on to the next slide. We are now facing a rapidly increasing demand for technical assistance to communities, to schools, and to clinics for this model of care, and ensuring school-based health centers are a growing part of children's safety net in Minnesota. Today, the Minnesota School-Based Health Alliance is one of 28 affiliates in the U.S. The decision to become a nonprofit organization with staff was based upon accelerating demand for assistance across the state as students returned to school after distance learning with delayed healthcare and unmet mental health care needs. Our priority is to ensure best practices in school-based care, address sustainability of care already delivered in schools, and expand school-based health efforts, particularly in rural communities. National evidence demonstrates school-based care can address education equity, assist the whole community, support the current mental health crisis, and provide continuity of care for students. And we can take a look at the next slide. As you can see on the slide, there's some opportunity for growth in Minnesota. There's a saturation point in other states that is higher than in the Midwest, and we have an opportunity to advance that. North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa, Wisconsin are working on a similar effort. We have a mapping tool here that I think I'm not going to take a chance with the technology, but it helps us to see correlation between where there are clinics, where there are healthcare deserts where there are schools, where there are school-based clinics in Minnesota. And it helps us to also take a look at healthcare needs like uninsurance rates across the state. And that is a tool that we use and is used nationally to develop relationships between schools, districts, and healthcare providers where the need is greatest. Minnesota has the opportunity to urgently and cost-effectively amplify school-based clinics with a reasonable investment. And we can move on to the next slide. This, again, you saw from the Department of Health, this is where we have school-based health centers in Minnesota. And this is also, of the 27 school-based health centers in Minnesota, the number of operators, or what we call sponsoring organizations. The different colors represent different business models. So we have federally qualified healthcare centers, local public health, Park Nicollet, which is part of Health Partners. Then we have two private healthcare entities and two education entities, the Minnesota State University and St. Catherine University, their nursing students and nursing professors staff the school-based clinics. And we can move on, thank you. Okay, so what you're looking at here is data from the National School-Based Health Alliance demonstrating which states currently have dedicated funding for school-based health centers. From 2004 to 2017, states with dedicated funding experienced 35% more program growth than states without. For example, two states over in Michigan, $20,000 of dedicated funding serves, helps support 140 school-based health centers and serves 20,000 students, as compared to Minnesota, where we have 27 school-based health centers serving $10,000. And though we have a 50-year history of existing in Minnesota, which shows sustainability, we have not yet asked for dedicated school fund or dedicated state funding. We actually invented this model of care in Minnesota in the 1970s, and I think the 50 years of stability demonstrates this model is both durable and sustainable. But we've not kept up with the rate of growth that we see in other states, despite having a replicable and quite affordable model. Next slide, please. So these are some
of
the-
If you could wrap up in a minute or so, that would be helpful.
Sure.
Thank you.
So take a look at some of the reasons that we appreciate the work of school-based clinics. Our bill recognizes expansion of school-based care is on the horizon. This bill simply ensures that there's a definition in Minnesota statute offering a minimum amount of regulatory language, reinforcing that MDH is evaluating this work, and contracts the Alliance to provide a blueprint and technical assistance throughout the state as expansion occurs. We're here to ensure that public school healthcare partners will find a way to care for any child regardless of the ability to pay, which means that school-based health centers do not bill families. They do not bill families for their care. Also, this ensures that these partnerships are between a school and a district and a clinical partner delivering quality care that meets federal, state, and local regulations already in place. We're not looking to change any of those. We are here requesting a definition in statute because we will help the state meet the state's goals right now. Preparedness for crises like COVID, mental health support for students at a critical time, addressing education disparities, and recognizing we have healthcare deserts in some regions in Minnesota. We simply make caring for kids easier and more costly for families, communities, and schools. And I believe that's the end of the slides, but let's go to the end. Yes, we're providing structure, investing responsibly, promising sustainability, and of course, engaging families more in their kids' care, which our providers can speak to very well. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hedlund. The next testifier is Valeria Cristiani. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Freiberg. My name is Valeria Cristiani. I am a community pediatrician in Rochester, Minnesota. I have the privilege of being the medical director for the Rochester Alternative Learning Center Clinic, which is a Mayo Clinic primary care site. I'm going to be brief. I think that the main, I'm here to answer your questions that you may have about how school-based health centers help your constituents, our patients, our students and families. One of the main things that maybe I just wanted to share with you is kind of like, what do I see day to day when I am in the school clinic, and what does that mean? What does that look like? I see firsthand how many families, because of, you know, of life, they have so many barriers to access care. And the fact that we have a school-based health clinic really helps the students remain in school when appropriate, and have parents don't miss work to attend visits to healthcare providers. There are also important issues in terms of equity. You know, the fact that we are there, we see all the students. These are services that are no cost to families. Definitely we follow the law. Of course, we do not see any child without parental consent. We do follow Minnesota statutes for those exemptions. If you want to know, I can tell you what those three exemptions are if you have questions about that. But I will leave you with this example. You know, the collaboration that happens between school-based health centers and schools is phenomenal. For example, there's a student that comes to mind that he was struggling in class. He was not able to learn. The school staff was the one that reached out to the parent to see if they wanted the student to be seen at our clinic. We were able to see the student, do the evaluation, diagnose him with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, provide that low English proficiency family and the family that had a lot of barriers to access care with culturally appropriate instructions on what the diagnosis meant, help the student get the medication, and that student successfully is in class learning. So I really appreciate all your time and effort in being, you know, really setting up our state for success. School-based health centers are needed, and I am here to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Christiani. Our last testifier on this bill is Linda Dick Olson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Freiberg, and members of the committee for allowing me to show my support for school-based health clinics in Minnesota. My name is Linda Dick Olson, and I'm a therapist in our school-based clinics, and I also fill the role of Director of Behavioral Health at Minnesota Community Care. I always like to share with people that I started my journey in health and school-based health on September 11th in 2001, and in providing care on that day shaped my understanding of how important it was that we were embedded in the schools. We were able to provide crisis care in the moment that was needed, and I spent that entire day supporting and calming students during a very traumatic time. I was so grateful that I was able to be there. In my 20 plus years in school-based health, it has been very challenging and very rewarding. I think Shauna had spoken to the fact that our goal is to provide the best care possible to the students most in need. And I believe that we do so. Over the last 2 years, we've seen an increase in trauma related to the isolation that the pandemic has caused. Both families and students are struggling more than at any time that I've seen during my time providing clinical care, and they have fewer resources for support and for getting care. Referrals to our services have increased, and the level of need of each of those referrals is higher than I've ever seen. Students are struggling with chronic grief and chronic trauma. My caseload has grown to a level that I have not seen before. One of the things that I think that we provide, and I believe Valeria spoke to this as well, is that we are liaisons between the students, the parents, and the school. We provide care to students where they are most of the day. We're able to see them in the community that they're in most of the day. And we're able to provide that that linkage between parent in the school and what was going on in the child's life. I am so blessed that we're able to provide care to students who might not otherwise be able to get care. Those without insurance are oftentimes left without care in other places. I do have a student right now whose parent is struggling in an emotionally abusive situation. And she is trying to right now leave her husband. And because of that time, because of that divorce situation, she's lost her insurance. Her kids are traumatized by some things that have happened earlier on in the relationship. And the kids have been exhibiting some signs of trauma while they were at school. If the parent did not have access to good care that was available to her during the school day, the mother would not be able to afford the care and she wouldn't have the time to be able to bring them to that care. So we were able to support that mother during that difficult time. We're able to provide that advocacy for her and her kids within the school and to help to bridge that relationship between them and the school. So I'm so glad that we were able to support families in this way. And I hope that you will continue to see us as a worthwhile cause. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. That is all the people who have signed up for the bill, so we can move to member discussion. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, presenters, for the information that you've provided for us today. I had many questions that came up as you were talking. I wanted to ask just a little bit from Dr. Cristiani, just some sort of process questions. So I understand there's one of these facilities in Rochester. Is that the one you work at?
That's correct.
Ms. Cristiani, Representative Ackland.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
So my question is, in this area that you're working in, apparently there are several schools in that area, but your facility is located at one of the schools. Is that correct?
That's
so
right.
So if children from another school want to access the care, how do they get to your facility?
Ms. Cristiani.
Yes. So we thank you for the question. At this point, the Alternative Learning Center school serves the students at the Rochester Alternative Learning Center. We have a very collaborative relationship with Rochester Public Schools, but at this point, we do not have a school clinic presence in each one of the schools. So, but what we are doing, and again, I think that part of what you're discussing today in terms of the bill, it would be extremely important and supportive of actually that expansion to be able to allow other students to have the same services that the Rochester ALC Clinic has. But what we're doing is trying to be innovative and create partnerships with other community schools in Rochester, so with other schools in Rochester via telehealth. And so what we're doing is trying to have a new way of seeing students from other schools through telehealth or potentially, transportation to our clinic if needed. But that we work with Rochester Public Schools. We don't decide this alone.
Representative Ackland, any follow-up?
Yes, please. Thank you. And thank you for that answer. So back to one of the other, the first presenter. My question is, what is the vision for this? Because when I think of how many facilities this would take to really serve all of our students here in Minnesota, I mean, it's like, is this the best path to take? Since we do have medical facilities, we have family practice, we have pediatricians, we have, our workforce shortage is already sort of at a critical level anyway. And so now we're trying to expand and develop more facilities, which would require more workforce, more providers, et cetera. So my question is, the vision, what is the end point? What is the vision for this model of care for the students?
Ms. Headland, I think this question might be for you.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Representative Ackland, and I think it's very appropriate right now. I'll address workforce first. I was formerly the director of school-based health centers for Minnesota Community Care. There's 11 clinics within that system, all in St. Paul public schools and charter schools. And there's a point in time where 91% of the staff that f- fill the position of medical assistants, a medical assistant, which is a critical role, we're actually former patients of the clinic. And so what we find is that most school-based health centers also extend into the school to engage students in some leadership opportunities. Because we're in an educational setting, we provide a model of future careers. And what we find is that for kids that have access to school-based health centers and those providers in their schools, they're moving into healthcare careers at a high, significant rate. And so I think that this does help generate a healthcare workforce. And it also is a very low staffing model. For instance, any one school-based clinic might have a medical assistant and a nurse practitioner. There's one in Ortonville that has one nurse practitioner, and then they also supply the school nurse. And that's it. That's that is their the extent of their staffing. In terms of infrastructure, because of the mobility of healthcare today, sometimes this can be done simply just with mobile care, or as highlighted earlier, with telehealth care. And so it's a very low infrastructure. There are many schools who have invested in and built school-based health centers. For instance, St. Paul Schools estimates their cost of supporting the infrastructure of their school-based clinics at $7 a square foot. And also realize that this is healthcare is a has a revenue stream. We bill insurance where we can. We don't bill families that don't have access to insurance. We don't send bills home, but we do bill insurance and third-party billers, and that generates sustainability of wraparound services for that school district.
Thank you, Ms. Hedlund. Representative Ackland, we do have three members in the queue with questions, so if you could wrap it up here, that would be helpful.
Oh, thank you, Chair Freiberg. I did have one more question, and but you know what? I'll be glad to let the other three, and if we have time at the end, I can ask my last one, if you'd prefer.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I appreciate the testimony. My question is, and I got a follow-up question. If I understood you correctly, Ms. Christiani, there's a three exemptions to notifying parents as far as healthcare. Could you tell us what those are quickly?
Yes, Ms. Christiani.
Yes. And again, I am a pediatrician, so I'm Dr. Christiani, and just for the record.
my apologies, Dr. Christiani.
No problem. So by statute in Minnesota, when students that are basically can seek medical care by themselves without parent consent, when there is a medical emergency, when there is a substance use health issue, or when there are reproductive health issues. Those are the three exceptions under statute.
What was the third one?
Reproductive health care.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, just one more quick statement. You know, I told that story before about the 16-year-old daughter that was referred to an outside clinic by the high school, and yet the parent was also told that they're obligated to pay the bill. So that was a problem. But I do have a constituent that emailed me on this, and I'll just share a couple statements of her concern. She says, the bill proposes more medical encroachment and government overreach by the state. Here in Minnesota, we already have public health programs providing most of the work this bill proposes. She goes on to say, stay out of our schools and leave our children alone. Our children are not your property to make decisions for. Government medical overreach stops now. Medical centers have no business in the schools. Finally, she says, before introducing any more money-driven socialist bills, please ask yourself which side of the history you want to be on, for the people and the parents or against us. Government has never was never meant to dictate people's lives. You know, I know Representative Sandel and many of you are well-intentioned, but I do think I got a number of emails on this of concern, and I do think there are quite a few parents that identify with her her concerns, having been on the school board for a number of years. And, you know, you do have counselors in this school that can make referrals, and you have telehealth. I don't know, you know, it's just hard for me to understand why we have to have them in the school. When I, as I said, I was 16 years on the school board, and we had, you know, a couple thousand students, and we were able to treat whatever the situation was from a medical standpoint without having a school-based clinic. So if there's any response from the testifiers.
I do see Representative Sandel with his hand up, so I think he may want to comment here.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, and Representative Grunhagen. The experience that you and I have both shared as teachers, administrators, and school board members is similar, I guess. I've been a teacher in communities of the most needy families and in schools of the most privileged families. And in both cases, I have to say that children's lives were saved by EMTs and a school nurse. The school-based health clinic is a voluntary activity. Schools only participate if they wish to, if their school board invites and approves the program. It is not a requirement that children attend those clinics, but as we've heard today from the testifiers, they are enormously important during situations of emergency and when children don't have access to health care in other situations. In response to Representative Ackland's question, I may be the most ambitious person on the panel here today as far as healthcare centers are concerned. I'd love to see a healthcare center in every school district, but I know every school district doesn't want one. Access or equity or achievement gap or however we wanted to describe it is an issue which deals with causes of problems, not just the symptoms, but the causes. And health is at the very foundation of a child's education, welfare, and future. So you can tell I'm a genuine and passionate supporter of this program, and I want to make sure that it's available for those who want it and need it.
Thank you, Representative Sandel. I would like to move to a vote on this bill within the next 5 minutes or so, since we do have another bill to get to and we have testifiers on that bill. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. My question is, we heard testimony, and I believe it was from Ms. Hedlund, about this is an evidence-based model, which I think is an important point to lift up and remind ourselves of. These are not about good intentions, but this is about the evidence that says this kind of model really works and has an impact on children's lives. The other thing but I would like to hear a little bit more about how, you know, by passing 3114 eventually is what we're after, moving it out of this committee and getting it passed eventually. How does formalizing the relationship, how does this bill basically help promote this model so that more schools will have access to it? And maybe just a couple more details how that's worked in other states that have gotten so far beyond us in using this model and then show these great outcomes afterwards. You know, what can we expect to see in the future, or what can we hope to see in the future after passing this bill?
Representative Sandel, did you want to take this? Do you want me to? I see Ms. Hedlund with her hand up too.
Well, thank you, Chair Freiberg. Briefly, the bill suggests a process in which schools may approach the alliance and ask for technical help establishing a health center within their district. It also provides the alliance the opportunity to contact a school district and say, this is the service we offered, and if you and your school board and administrators and parents are interested, we can certainly help you establish that. That's one of the areas of the bill that I'm most enthusiastic about. Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Representative Sandel. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I just want to mention and say thank you to Representative Sandel for bringing this bill forward. I think for most of us who have been to schools and talked to teachers and school administrators and looked at the true outcomes of healthcare, you know, we have a lot of work to do for us. These kids are coming in the door. They bring with them the emotional problems. They bring with them nutrition problems. They bring, you know, this mental health thing that we're talking about. And we have done things like school-linked mental health and put money into that. But, you know, I spoke to some of the counselors locally here, and they described the mental health issue at our schools as an emergency room within a clinic. And that was prior to the COVID issue. So, I mean, we have a lot of work to do, and bringing healthcare closer to the ground to the students who need them is something that this model offers. It's a proven model, not only in the state, but nationally. So thanks for bringing the bill forward. I'm a big supporter and will continue to advocate for it. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Ackland, did you have a question?
Briefly. So for me, I feel like the emphasis in healthcare in general should be on family care. Individuals seeing a doctor here and a doctor there is not as healthy as having a family physician who knows the family, who knows all the children in the family and the dynamics there. So I would really push for that. And the other thing is, just as far as the budget's concerned, could we better spend our money making sure that every school has a school nurse and has a social worker? This will serve a small community. I understand maybe the value of it, but I understand a bigger picture that we need more healthcare within each of our schools and not just a few communities. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ackland. There was some confusion. There was a testifier who I think we were under the understanding had asked to speak on the second bill. Dr. Aaron Williams, I see you've turned your camera on. Were you in fact interested in speaking to this bill, or was it the second bill? If you could just let me know real quick.
Yes, it was the first bill regarding the health clinics and schools. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. With members' indulgence, then, I apologize. There was a miscommunication on this issue, it sounds like. So if you could quickly testify here, I'll just revert to the testimony just to let you speak on the bill you intended to speak on.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members, as well. While I oppose this bill on the grounds of parental rights, I support your premise of improving the health and well-being of our children. And in support of that premise and to work with you is why I'm presenting an alternate strategy, not as a partisan, but as a physician. What I'm about to tell you will come as a bit of a shock to this committee and to the public, but I'm here to give you, the committee, the ability to make a historic preventative health policy with a breakthrough technology that we all will agree on. This is nothing short of a miracle. And this is not hyperbole. This is 100% science. By far the biggest crises that we've alluded to that our children are facing right now are this pandemic and the accompanying school closures and quarantining. The virus and these public health measures have led, as UNICEF recently stated, to nearly insurmountable losses in education for children. And also, according to the U.S. Surgeon General, to a national youth mental health crisis he describes as devastating. Amazingly, the practical solution for this devastation from COVID is quite simple. The premise of all of our interventions, closing schools, public places, keeping people apart, masks and vaccines, revolves simply around the spread of COVID in the air. You can say that the air is dirty, and this brand new technology called Krypton Far UV lighting cleans it continuously by killing all of the viruses and bacteria in the air, preventing the virus from getting to our students and citizens in the first place. After we install these lights in a given space, by simply disinfecting the air, we will never need to shut down that space again. Far UV light is invisible to the naked eye, but kills 99.9% of all microbes in the air in less than 5 minutes, and likely close to instantaneous as you breathe out, including influenza, et cetera. COVID is particularly easy for it to kill. This is estimated to provide protection 20 times that of an N95 mask for everyone in the room. Its microbial killing is indiscriminate. Variants and drug resistance do not matter. It's been developed by the world's preeminent scientists, physicians, and institutions. And people fear things they don't understand, though. And most believe all UV light is harmful, but this light has been extensively tested and is literally safer than sunlight. The calculated chance of skin cancer is 1 in a quadrillion. FAR-UV has been installed in the Pentagon, Air Force bases, bus lines, and recently installed in the school district of Sumter, South Carolina, in 331 buses and their schools. And I applaud Democratic Representative Clyburn's campaign championing its installation. There are truly no important boxes left to check except the education of the public and to install them. In closing, vaccines and drugs will always lag behind the next pandemic. It took almost 1 year to develop the first vaccine for COVID, now being rendered virtually obsolete by the Omicron variant. Paxlovid pills took almost 2 years, and we can't afford this delay. FAR-UV lights will allow us to stay ahead of every future pandemic, killing all present and future pathogens indiscriminately. This is the very definition of preventative health strategy, and I'm calling for FAR-UV lights to become the standard building code in all public places. There's the size of a simple smoke detector, very easy to install, in mass production, and we can begin implementation within weeks. I have no conflicts of interest to offer. My free and continuous consultation to you, to the school boards, this committee, and the Minnesota legislature in developing Krypton FAR-UV lighting legislation and implementation plans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and Representative Grunhagen for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Williams. Representative Heintzman, a quick question.
Yeah, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I was going to ask the doctor if, you know, in his testimony, you know, he's trying to keep it in the 3 minutes. I'm wondering, Dr. Aaron, what exactly brought you to want to bring that to the committee today? In other words, you know, I see from time to time, different locations, I've seen people or advertisements for light technology that is, I think it was in an airport recently, in fact, that's working to kill bacteria and such, if I have that right or have that wrong, I don't know. But you're passionate about it. I'm just curious what sort of put you onto it.
Dr. Williams, quickly, we are moving a little afield of the bill, and we do have another bill that we need to get to, but I'll give some latitude and let you respond quickly here.
Thank you. So being involved in administration, 2 years ago, I found this. It was promising at the time, but since has been developed more by Columbia University, New York City, Harvard, Oxford, Hopkins, Boeing, NASA, the government, Department of Defense, et cetera. So I've seen this for a long time. It's in a niche where people just don't know about it, number one, don't understand it, number two. And that's why I'm passionate, because what this will do was even in Time magazine by Dr. Ed Nardell from Harvard talking about how we need to be cleaning our indoor public spaces with this. And so bringing it to this bill, we're talking about children's health and we're talking about the health of the community in general. That's why I'm bringing it up here. The old lights always get confused, and those are the ones advertised in all the airports. Only the Atlanta airport has started installing these lights.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Williams. Representative Sandell, do you have any closing remarks on the bill?
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, and the committee, and those who testified. We've had a broad discussion here, and I look forward to continuing the discussion and appreciate your indulgence and the questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sandell. So hearing no further discussion, I renew the motion that House File 3114 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Acomb.
Yes.
Representative Abaje.
Yes.
Representative Ackland.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Representative Franzen.
Franzen, no.
Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
Chair, you have 7-4.
Okay, there being 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3114 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Sandell, for presenting your bill, and thank you to the testifiers who spoke on it. The next bill on our agenda is House File 3005. Representative Acomb, would you like to recommend that House File 3005 be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members, and yes, that would be my motion.
Okay. Representative Acomb moves her bill be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Please present your bill, Representative Acomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It was just about a year ago that in this committee, we had a joint hearing with the Climate and Energy Committee on the impact of climate change on public health. We heard from several speakers and learned about the Climate and Health Program within the Minnesota Department of Health. This program is respected throughout the region and is a resource to public health professionals all across our state. We know our climate is changing, and in fact, Minnesota is changing faster than most any other state in our country. I believe all our state agencies should be addressing climate change. And when we have an agency doing good work in this area that is a resource throughout our state, we can't go backwards and let it go away. The Climate and Health Program was started and funded through a federal grant, and unfortunately, last year that grant was not extended. So this bill is simply restoring the funding for this program to do its important work at this crucial time. Last year alone in Minnesota, we experienced several public health-related events caused by our changing climate. Extreme heat and poor air quality are just two that many of us remember all too well. We love our Minnesota summers and long for the days to be outside and enjoy the fresh air. Last summer, that was a challenge and a risk to many of us, and the Climate Health Program was a helpful resource that communities and people all around the state can access to identify risks as well as strategies to help limit the impacts. And so with that, Chair, I think there's a couple others that had wanted to testify about the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Acum. We have two rather than three people who have signed up to testify. First is Elizabeth Moe from the Minnesota Public Health Association. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Moe. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of this committee, for the opportunity to voice our support for House File 3005 that would appropriate money for a climate and health program under the Minnesota Department of Health. This is Elizabeth Moe, and I am the current president of the Minnesota Public Health Association, MPHA. MPHA is a statewide independent public health association comprised of over 350 members representing a wide variety of public health disciplines. Established in 1907, MPHA has been dedicated to creating a healthier Minnesota through effective public health practice and engaged citizens. MPHA is also one of 14 Minnesota health professional organizations that signed the Declaration on Climate Change and Health, declaring climate change a health emergency. Climate change, as you said, is a critical issue and is acknowledged to be one of the greatest threats to public health. As we face the growing threat of climate change to our health, our communities, and our environment, and our economies, we request that you authorize funding for MDH to maintain and grow a robust climate and health program. In addition, we know that the most vulnerable in our state are disproportionately impacted by climate change. This includes children, seniors, pregnant women, low-income communities, communities of color, people with disabilities, and chronic disease. Climate change threatens individual and community health, with the greatest impacts on the communities least resourced to adapt to and address these changes. Communities of color, low-income communities, Indigenous people, and people with disabilities and chronic illness are at highest risk for the impact of climate change. Now more than ever, we need the expertise of MDH to address the climate crisis as a health emergency. MPHA, in our most recent policy resolution around climate change, recognized that public health professionals are best poised to prevent, detect, and manage health implications of climate change. The public health needs to be the leading voice in advancing climate change strategies and interventions that have co-benefits for all. Our climate is already changing, and we are seeing the public health impacts today. MDH should continue to play a critical role in research, education, health tracking, and technical assistance on an array of issues, including extreme heat, drinking water protection, vector-borne diseases, respiratory and mental health, sustainability, and emergency preparedness. While these many programs within MDH are researching the impacts of climate change in Minnesota, without a climate change program, there will not be a place to put all of these issues together so that the surveillance data and recommendations around climate change can be clearly communicated. It is also important that MDH have the capacity to work with communities, healthcare systems, and local health departments in assessing their vulnerabilities to climate change, choosing the adaptation solutions that work best for them, and implementing actions that will increase their resilience to climate change. The time for action is now. Climate change disproportionately impacts the health of at-risk Minnesotans, and we need to put resources where needed to strengthen Minnesota's capacity for providing effective health response to climate threats. While MDH has had a climate health program in the past, funded by a federal grant from the CDC, and even though we are no longer getting the federal money, we cannot afford to stop this important work. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Public Health Association.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Moe. And the other testifier on this bill is Kristen Ackert. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to refer it to my colleague, Kristen Robb. So I will share my screen here for her presentation in a moment.
Sure. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Robb. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I really appreciate being able to speak with you today. I'm Kristen Robb, the director of the Minnesota Climate and Health Program at the Minnesota Department of Health, and I'm going to briefly talk to you about the health impacts of climate change in Minnesota, what the Minnesota Climate Health Program has been doing, and just briefly touch on the governor's proposal that supports this program. Next slide, please. Climate change is the greatest existential threat to public health because it impacts all the things that we need to live: clean air, drinking water, available food, and safe housing. This graph demonstrates how increased emissions in greenhouse gases is leading to rising temperatures and changes in precipitation. These changes are disrupting our air quality, weather patterns, water quality and quantity, and ecosystems, which in turn are leading to more air pollution, extreme heat, flooding, and droughts, and ecosystem threats like ticks. Next slide, please. These climate hazards, like air pollution, extreme heat, flooding, and drought, and ecosystem threats, affect our health in a variety of ways. For example, rising temperatures have increased the allergenic ragweed pollen season by 15 to 25 days in and around Minnesota. This can cause more respiratory issues, such as increases in allergies and asthma. Increasing temperatures can create more smog and increase the likelihood of droughts, wildfires, and more intense extreme heat events. In the summer of 2011, we had 6 days when the heat index was 105 degrees or higher, and we had 1,302 emergency department visits and 3 deaths due to heat. The changing character of precipitation in Minnesota is leading both to more extreme rainfall events and droughts. Since 1973, Minnesota has experienced 16 destructive mega rain events. These are events that are 6 inches of rain falling over 1,000 square miles. These events are 3 times more common now than they were between 1973 and 2001. Extreme precipitation can lead to flooding, which can lead to health injuries, but it can also have indirect effects like flooding of basements, causing mold growth and then exacerbating allergies and asthma, or it can destroy homes, businesses, and crops, leading to housing instability, financial insecurity, and mental health stress issues. Next slide, please. The point of this is not that these changes are far off in the future. It's something that's happening right now, and it's impacting the health of our communities. You may remember the unprecedented air quality event from this past summer, where the entire state was under an air quality alert that lasted several days. And in some parts of the state, the air quality reached levels that were so poor that it was unhealthy for anyone to be outside and breathe that air. These types of events from wildfire smoke precipitated by drought and fires burning in the United States and Canada are likely to increase. So next slide, please. What is MDH doing about the health impacts of climate change? Minnesota Climate and Health Program is built around three areas. That's providing credible health information and education, developing tools and resources for our partners to use in planning and adapting to climate change, and then researching and analyzing data to better understand the interconnections between climate and health effects. Next slide, please. Here's just one example of an education campaign that we developed to cover seven topics related to climate change. Six are listed on the slide, but we also did work on vector-borne diseases. Each of these topics contain a suite of materials, including a one-hour webinar, a fully scripted PowerPoint, and two-page summaries for those people that don't have a lot of time to listen to a webinar like probably yourself. Next slide, please. Our program works with others that are often on the front lines of dealing with the health impacts of climate change, like local public health departments. So this tool was a joint venture between MDH and the University of Minnesota to develop an online GIS mapping resource for local public health and planners to assess vulnerable populations in their communities, as well as understand both what the communities had experienced in the past with extreme heat, and then their likelihood of experiencing more extreme heat events in the future. Several local public health departments have used this tool to plan and prepare for more extreme heat events and to target resources to those in their communities that need them most. Next slide, please. We've also partnered with emergency managers who are intimately working with their communities during extreme weather events. MDH, in consultation with emergency managers at the state and local level, developed customized climate and health profiles for each of the six Minnesota Homeland Security and Emergency Management regions. Next slide. These reports provided climate projection data, including future temperature and precipitation data and demographic information to emergency managers so that they could better plan for our future. To make the data meaningful, the profiles used real life examples of events that happened in their region to highlight the impacts these events can have on the economy and the health of the people in the region. This work is an important example of the department translating data and research into actionable information. People on the front lines dealing with disasters and climate change impacts don't have the time to look into all the research and synthesize what is meaningful. We help them do that by packaging the information in a useful way. We also performed an evaluation of the profiles and found that they had been incorporated into the state all hazards mitigation plan, and 67% of the new plans, the new all hazard plans mitigations have also incorporated this information. Next slide.
If you could please wrap up your testimony in a minute or so, that would be appreciated.
Absolutely. We also work at better understanding and describing the health impacts of climate change through research and data analysis. This is a project that mapped vulnerable private wells by county and projected levels of precipitation. Floodwaters often contain infectious organisms and industrial chemicals or other chemicals that can make people sick. A flooded well can contaminate a household's drinking water source, but possibly even the aquifer, which could then impact not only that family, but many people's drinking water. So having this information can help us better protect people on private wells as well as other aquifers. So these are just a few of the examples that our program has worked on to help prepare our partners for climate change. As was already mentioned, we were funded up until last year by the CDC. We now have no more federal funding to continue this work. So this is just the governor's proposal on the next slide, please, that basically supports this program so we continue this work and provides an extra component of grants to local public health, local governments, soil watershed districts, and others to plan for the impacts of climate change. So thank you again for letting me speak with all of you today.
Yep, thank you for your testimony. And that concludes the list of people who have signed up to testify on this bill. So we will turn to member discussion. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I appreciate the presentation. However, I do have to contrast it just slightly. I do have a concern about the very premise of this bill, along with the fact that the verbiage in the bill is not very clear, although I did appreciate the testimony that helped clear a little bit of it up. But this is a petition signed by over 30,000 U.S. scientists, and I'm just going to read two sentences. 9,000 of those scientists have doctorates or PhDs. It says, the proposed limits on greenhouse gases would harm the environment, hinder the advancement of science and technology, and damage the health and welfare of mankind, just the opposite of what was testified. There is no convincing scientific evidence that human release of carbon dioxide, methane, or other greenhouse gases is causing or will in the foreseeable future cause catastrophic heating of the Earth's atmosphere and disruption of the Earth's climate. Moreover, there is substantial scientific evidence that increases in atmospheric CO2 produce many beneficial effects upon the natural plant and animal environments of the Earth, signed by over 30,000 U.S. scientists that are not tax subsidized to come up with fraudulent science evidence for the global warming. So I urge members to vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Let's try to avoid casting aspersions on motives here. Representative Akam, did you want to respond?
Well, only just briefly, in that I appreciate the representative's statements about greenhouse gas emissions. And really, if you look at what the climate health program is doing, it's not really talking about greenhouse gas emissions. It's talking about public health impacts from climate change. And so I appreciate the concerns. What they're really looking at is what we're seeing on the ground in communities all across our state that are struggling with, vector-borne diseases that has increased dramatically over the last couple of decades. We're dealing with extreme heat and air quality. And these are things that we have not had issues before in Minnesota. And so to have a program that's addressing that and allowing a resource for all of our states to utilize seems to me like it's good policy.
All right. Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Agbaje.
Thanks so much, Chair, and thank you, Representative Akam, for bringing forward this bill. I just had a question if either Ms. Robb or Ms. Moe wanted to elaborate a little bit on kind of just what the impact of the program has been. It sounds like with a lot of the data that you collect and the synthesizing that you do, there's been, I would assume that there's been some positive impact and changes that you've seen across Minnesota. So if you could talk about that a little bit, whether this has helped change corporate behavior or if you've seen positive results in kind of rural areas and urban core as it relates to flooding and the heat zone issue. Thank you.
Ms. Robb?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. we have seen some positive impacts. We have done a lot of work, primarily with partners that are working more on the ground around climate change issues. So, for example, we've worked with local public health just for them to start thinking about the extreme heat events that they're experiencing more, and trying to determine where they have communities that might be more vulnerable, either for income issues or maybe they don't have air conditioning or other kinds of issues. And so they've been able to target different kinds of interventions into those communities that need those resources more. So we haven't measured down to the sort of local level, just that level of measurement at this point, but it's something that we want to do in the future is really have a better evaluation component. But I can say that our tools that we have developed have been picked up by our partners, and they have been used for them to do better planning and resource management as they're protecting health around climate change.
Thank you. Representative Agbaje, follow up?
No, I appreciate that. I do hope that the additional funding to this program can help pull more data out about the evaluation pieces of this program. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank you for bringing both of these bills up for hearings today. I feel like it's intersection day. Appreciate Representative Sandel carrying a bill that meets the intersection of education and health, and grateful to Representative Acom for bringing the bill that meets the intersection of climate and public health. Because none of these issues, of course, exist in silos by themselves. They impact each other and intersect. And it seems clear to me, as Representative Acom and the testifiers noted, we're seeing impacts on the ground. This is not a theoretical future that we're talking about anymore. This is where we are. And so we need to be looking at these issues, addressing them. And to Representative Agbaje's point, use the data that we get so that we can make impacts to improve people's lives as we work to both mitigate and improve resilience to the real world impacts that we're living through now and that we expect will accelerate. So just not a question, but just a round of thanks to all.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I don't see any additional member questions. So seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Acom?
Just thank you for the opportunity for a hearing today, and I renew my motion for House File 3005 to be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you. Representative Acom renews her motion to re-refer House File 3005 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Acom.
Yes.
Representative Agbaje.
Yes.
Representative Ackland.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
Chair, you have 7-4.
Okay, there being 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3114 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, members. That concludes our discussion for today. Stay tuned in your email inbox for the agenda for next week's meeting. Seeing no additional member discussion, this meeting is adjourned.